Live from New York City, it's The Gary Mel Show. And now, your host, Gary Mel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Mel. Today, we're going to learn about Civil War plants that beat today's drugs, and especially the drugs that are resistant to bacteria. The Confederate field hospitals turned to traditional remedies under the Union blockade. A study from Emory University. I thought you'd find that of interest. Then we have some audio clips. We're going to go to part two of that school teacher talking about what's wrong with our educational system, how it's been captured by the for-profit educators, the people who want to make the money off textbooks, but don't care about the nature of what they're teaching in the textbooks. Just test, test, test. Someone always profits from this. We're also going to look at the Terminator, the Skynet, and Alexa, the present future of artificial intelligence. This is from Mark Taltuo at a TED Talk. Also, we'll be listening to Joshua Katz, K-A-T-Z, when he's talking about the educational system. And I'm going to do a commentary today from Paul Craig Roberts. He says, the Assange Manning cases discredit humanity. It's a blistering critique. I'll be quoting from that. I'll be answering your calls on our talkback number, our voicemail line, where you can call and leave a comment if it's constructive, if we can all benefit from it. It's not a rant line. I don't see the purpose of that. Instead, something that we can look deeper, more meaningful at. Our number to call is 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. Most people listen to this program by going to the archives. Let me give you that archive number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. During the height of the Civil War, the Confederate Surgeon General commissioned a guide to traditional plant remedies of the South. As battlefield physicians faced high rates of infections among the wounded and shortages of conventional medicine, as a result, there were massive amputations and people dying of septicemia. A new study of three of the plants from this guide, the white oak, the tulip poplar, and the devil's walking stick, finds that they have very strong antiseptic qualities. Scientific Reports is publishing the results of the study led by scientists at Emory University. The results show that extracts from the plants have antimicrobial activity against one or more of a trio of dangerous species of multidrug-resistant bacteria associated with wound infections, including Staphylococcus aureus and Klebsiella. Quote, our findings suggest that the use of these topical therapies may have saved some limbs and maybe even lives during the Civil War. That's according to the senior author of the paper and the head of Emory's University's Study of Human Health at the School of Medicine's Department of Dermatology. That's interesting. Now, we know that a lot of therapies, natural therapies from around the world, from the Amazon, and that's where we learned about, for example, the gourds and the root vegetables that we get a lot of our protein from, or beginning to, only a small amount now, but they've been using it for a long time. So we should be open to native healing. From Penn State University, exercise can help teenagers sleep longer and more efficiently. That's good, because getting more exercise than normal or being more sedentary than usual for one day may be enough to affect sleep later that night. In a one-week micro-longitudinal study, the researchers found that when teenagers got more physical activity than they usually did, they got to sleep earlier, slept longer, and slept better that night. Specifically, the team found that for every extra hour of moderate to vigorous exercise, the teens fell asleep 18 minutes earlier, slept 10 minutes longer, and had about 1% greater sleep maintenance efficiency that night. So when you consider that what we lack in sleep earlier on can definitely play havoc with our immune system later in life, quality sleep as a teenager is essential to having quality health as an adult. Then we have a study from University of California, San Diego. And we've known this, but we needed the evidence. Now we have it. Early life exposure to nicotine alters neurons and predisposes your brain to addiction later. Neonatal exposure to nicotine when the mother is pregnant and smoking alters the reward circuitry in the brains of newborn, increasing their preference for the drug in later adulthood. That's important. And this was published in Biological Psychiatry. Just as we've known for about 30 years now that secondhand smoke is deadly. Well, imagine in my case, I grew up in a family where everyone except myself smoked. And they smoked 3 to 4 packs a day. So our little house, which was under 1,000 square feet, looked like a chimney. Everything stunk. Everybody stunk. Everybody's breath was terrible. I remember I had an Aunt Helen. She was a hoot. She was very funny, my father's sister. And of all my aunts and uncles, she just had the best personality. But she would drink coffee and smoke cigarettes and come over and give me a kiss on the cheek. And when I could smell her bad breath a foot away, but you couldn't do anything. So I'd go in the bathroom, wash my face the moment I had a chance. People who smoke, their breath stinks. Drink coffee, your breath stinks. Smoke and drink, your breath really stinks. You probably won't notice that. Others are just being polite. Mount Sinai study finds that the CBD treats opiate addiction by reducing cravings and anxiety. This is from the Carl Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. The CBD is your cannabinoid, and it's reduced cue-induced cravings and anxiety in individuals with a history of heroin abuse. This is published in the American Journal of Psychiatry. So what it means in lay language is that if you take the CBD to reduce physiological measures of stress reactivity, such as increased heart rate, cortisol is increasing when you're coming off a drug, and if you've never helped people off a drug addiction, you have no idea what extremes their bodies will go to. I was the head of drug addiction at Trafalgar Hospital for a long time. The historical programs there simply were not working, but they were paid by each person coming in, and so whether it succeeded or not, it was court mandated. You either went over there to get treatment or you went to jail. So, of course, people wanted to go there. But when someone would start coming off, you would see projectile vomiting. I mean, just like out of the movie The Exorcist, everything, that person would just go 10 feet across, hit a wall. They would start shaking violently. They would go through extremes and sweating and shivering. And, of course, you have to have a medical team there to help a person through this crisis. So just imagine if we had the cannabidiol, which is your powerful, let's say, detoxifier, and giving that in all cases where there's addiction. We could help people get off heroin, cocaine, crack, methamphetamines. And this was actually a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled design to show that it works. It makes enormous difference. We have a lot of addicted people in our society. So this is just one more way to help them. This is the University of Chicago. Now think of this. Your risk of dying hinges on well-being, not diseases. Well, for all of you who just attended that 1 to 2 week retreat, do you remember the big lecture I did? We were filming it for a new documentary I'm doing on how to measure how long you are likely to live unless you make changes. It's the first of its kind, and it's all based upon good science, and it can show that we can add 30 years onto our life. My filming is done. Now we have to go into post-production, but I can't do that until I finish my other film, and we have one more person, Chris Hedges, to film, and then we're done. I'll be premiering it later in August. And then I'll go to this one, because I think it's very important. But I said in here, if you had the perfect diet, if you ate like I do, all right? If you drank all the the juices and had the compounding powders, which can give you almost 30 times more nutrients than just a juice. If you exercise for an hour, hour and a half a day, both resistance and aerobic, if you dealt with stress appropriately, didn't personalize everything, and if you had a clean environment, meaning you didn't have particle boards and formaldehyde outgassing from your carpets, mold in your ceilings or your baseboards, that would give you about 50% of living a long life. 50% has to do with quality of your beliefs. And that's what they're saying here. And this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. This new study has yielded a radical different picture of aging in America, finding that how old you are plays little or no role in determining the differences in health and well-being. I've been saying that my entire career. The researchers say that the results suggest that medical community is focusing on the wrong set of factors to determine the risk of dying. Rather, they rely upon a checklist of infirmaries, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cholesterol levels. Perhaps it's time to consider a new comprehensive model that looks at factors such as psychological well-being, sensory function, mobility. And by the way, I would go far beyond that. But I'm glad to see they're finally turning around from the stupid process they've been waging and look at what really causes us to prematurely age or slow down the aging process. Also from the Bharathidasan University in India, colloidal silver made with Ganera, G-H-A-N-E-R-A extract, has anti-cancer and antimicrobial potential. What is this? The Ganera is a small flowering tree found in India. It bears an oblong fruit, which they're purplish when ripe and contains only a single seed. Now, it's known there as a rich source of CPT, and it's an inhibitor that can potentially treat ovarian and small lung cancers. And recently, researchers from the University in India discovered another application for it. Its fruit extract can be used as a capping agent in the biosynthesis of nanoparticles that have strong anti-cancer and antimicrobial activity, and that's the colloidal silver. So, we knew colloidal silver was good. It's really good. Now, we know that there's another type that's even better. This was published in Food Science and Human Wellness. And finally, from the University of Cincinnati, air pollution linked to childhood anxiety. Exposure to pollution in the air is a well-established global health problem associated with complications for people with asthma and respiratory disease, as well as heart conditions and an increased risk of stroke. That's according to the World Health Organization. It's responsible for millions of deaths every single year. And emerging evidence now suggests that air pollution may also impact the metabolic and neurological development of children. So, one more reason that if you live in a polluted environment, take the advice of the Peer Journal Environmental Research, get your kids to a cleaner environment. We'll use every excuse in the world not to change. This is my job, this is my career, this is where my family or friends are. That's all fine, and you can be absolutely correct. But just remember, if that's dirty air, your kid is going to suffer because of it. I don't see the reason for anyone to suffer if you could prevent it. One last one. The University of Cincinnati, blueberries are an effective weapon in the war against Alzheimer's disease. Little blueberries hold a colossal promise in the fight against Alzheimer's, where I'm giving an enormous amount of blueberries to people I work with who have dementia and Alzheimer's. Why? Simple. The flavonoids. They could hold the key to lessening the effects of the amyloid plaque in the brain. So, remember, Alzheimer's has become the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. In the next 10 years, it'll move up into the top five. And we have no current method of treating all those tens of millions of people who are going to have it in the near future. But having one cup of fresh blueberries every day could make a difference. Oh, and by the way, to reinforce the idea that maybe you should have your family closer to nature, from Barcelona Institute for Global Health, contact with nature during childhood could lead to better mental health in adulthood. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to come back and go right into your questions. Please stay with us.
Conversations and prior messages that have been left for you. My question here, more specifically, is if a smart meter is placed on a different floor other than our own and it is not in our apartment, is it still harmful? And until we can get it removed, if it is harmful, what can we do in the meantime? Thank you for your service. Thank you for this service. Have a good day.
To answer what I could barely hear, but I think I made out, you've left many messages. Well, join about 7,000 other people. I don't know which messages are coming. I take them as I can, but remember, we have a lot of people asking questions. To answer the specific question, a smart meter has a very high range of creating electromagnetic frequencies, not just in the apartment, not just in your house. Now, I'll give you an idea. The smart meter that's in your house is not any different than a smart meter in an apartment, and they're all going to be hooked up to the 5G. And that means that if you were the only one in your building that chose not to have a smart meter, you want an analog meter, you're still getting electromagnetic pulses, and I would move. I wouldn't use any excuse of what you would be losing, because one of those phone calls in the future might be what you lost, which is your health. Gary, I have lung cancer. I have a glioblastoma in my brain. I can't understand how I got this. I don't smoke. I don't drink. That's the cost of intentional neglect. If someone told me that I could gain something that would profit me, but I would lose something that would overwhelm anything I gained, I would never be foolish enough to take the short-term gain. And where society today, not everyone by any means, but a lot of people are not looking at the consequences of their actions, and they should, because every action in life has a consequence. So I would move. Or I would get a petition and get everyone in the building to understand the consequences of their health. Now, this triggered a thought. I got a call last night that Tucker Carlson was dealing with the 5G. So I turned it on, and he asked, and I'm glad he did, he asked a doctor about 5G, and was it safe? And unfortunately, he asked the wrong person, in my opinion. Why? Because the doctor says there was no evidence that there's any harm, but he wanted to see more studies. Wow. He could have been the perfect spokesperson for the tobacco industry. Here's my problem. My problem is not with the doctor. My problem is with Tucker Carlson, and please share this with him. Everyone in the audience, go up on PRN.fm. We just wrote the definitive article on what's wrong with 5G. It's there. Download it. Send it to him with a covering note that if he doesn't have a staff capable of doing intelligent, in-depth research so his audience, which is a large audience, can be well-informed, then maybe he should seek outside advice. Now, he was courageous enough to have, and no one else did, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on to talk about vaccines. Now, mind you, I remember when Robert F. Kennedy was pro-vaccines. Today, no. He has seen, when he's done his homework, the dangers, the fraud of the Gardasil vaccine, the MMR vaccine. He's bringing lawsuits against Merck. And while we're at it, yesterday I did the definitive article on why we should all be concerned with Merck and put Merck in the position of being the next Monsanto. It is my opinion that Bayer, that purchased, I think, for $62 billion last year, Monsanto, will have no choice but to cut off that acquisition and let it float. Its stock is down 42%. No institution is going to stay in that because they'll never get their investment out. And if you're investing for retirees who are counting upon increases of 2 to 3% per year to keep level with inflation, you've just lost an awful lot of people's, not just interest, you've lost their principal. And that's not coming back. Why? Because if you're at the ocean and you see the tide go out a half a mile, don't go out and start picking up seashells. Coming back is going to be a 50-foot tsunami. In the case of Bayer, there's going to be a 300-foot. It is estimated conservatively they're up to about $800 billion because they've got somewhere between 11,000 to 13,000 lawsuits, and that's just the beginning. They've lost three out of three. The latest one was $2 billion. So juries are fed up with their lying, deceit, and it couldn't have happened to a better company. Go back into Bayer's history, and you'll see what nefarious activities they engaged in, especially during World War II. But I'm not going to get into this now. My larger point is this. Right now, some Americans are awakening. Good. But they don't have information. Not good. And like this doctor, he's not looking for the right information. He's looking for official information. So the probability is he's a decent guy. I have nothing against him. He took the easy road. You know, he said, well, he looked on official sources. Maybe he went to some of these telecom companies' websites and reviewed some of the information. Oh, there's nothing there. Of course there's not. And the tobacco industry has nothing wrong about cigarette smokes on their sites. And the munitions company and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon have nothing that shows the death and destruction of human life in any of the country where their weapons are used. It wouldn't look good. So instead, they virtue signal if they're really doing something good, we're giving you fast, 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 extra fast service. Who cares? It's meaningless. The reality is this. 5G is the single most dangerous technology that the world is going to experience because no one will be immune. When they were dropping on the atolls in the Pacific, in Bimini Island, in other places, there was a 40-year deadly legacy of radiation that went in through all the native populations who were not evacuated. There was a legacy of radium poisoning, which is radiation, in those native Navajos working in the mines to mine the uranium. Did we know it was toxic at the time? Yes. We did nothing. Those are isolated situations. I come from West Virginia, from Appalachia. I saw black lung. I saw brown lung. Those working in the cotton mills down south had brown lung. Those working in the mines had black lung. Those working in the Kanawha Valley, where you had DuPont and the other chemical companies, ask them, did they have thyroid problems? They had goiter problems. Yes, they did. Almost every woman I knew over the age of 30 in my hometown, you look on their neck. And I asked my mom about this when I was a kid. What's that scar on everyone's neck? And she had it too. Goiter. Shouldn't have happened. Shouldn't happen. It's not just a deficiency of iodine. It was something in the environment. And when you're in a valley, everything that comes in as pollution stays in that valley. So we have 22,000 scientists who signed a letter. I read their letter showing the dangers of 5G. We found 10,000 articles. Now, mind you, tell Carlson this. This really is on Carlson now. Carlson, obviously you do your homework on topics you're going to debate on, whether I agree or disagree, and it's generally one or the other, on what you're debating. At least you've done your homework. You have good responses. But on something that's this important, it's going to be with 20,000 satellites. Every inch of the world will have 5G. There's no place you can move to get out of its range. This is the greatest human negative experience in history. So get someone on your team who's actually able to do quality scientific research. You make enough money. You're rich. You're a multi-millionaire. And you have connections everywhere. Surely in that cesspool that you live in, Washington, D.C., you can find one honest scientist, I hope. If not, there are other places that they actually exist. I cannot tell you the contempt I have for Washington, D.C. Last time I was in Washington, I led a demonstration in front of the Capitol. And then the Senate. I think they're all idiots. Totally compromised. All of them. I'm making no exception. None. If you think one of them's an exception because they support something, then ask this. Which liberal or conservative supports the following and actually has shown they support it by offering legislation? Whether it's killed or not, has co-sponsored or not, let them offer it. Let me give you a few to show you that they're not what you think. Repeal the Glass-Steagall Amendment and reinstate the Glass-Steagall Amendment. So we separate out banks from... Repeal the bail-in. So if banks fail, they can't keep all the money right now that they can under Obama in your bank account. Close down the 900 worthless bases that only bring terror to countries where we've had them, and there's absolutely no reason for us to have these. Why in the world would we have military installations in Germany? It's good for the military-industrial complex. It's good for no one else. What about universal health care? I've given you the mathematics. I've given you the actual areas where we can make changes and inspire universal health care. Some who say they're for it still want to keep the profit in it. Why not ask them to take all money out of all elections? Put one-term term limits. You're allowed one opportunity to go to Congress. Do not allow anyone to come from any agency from a major corporation because they're all compromised. Like Michael Taylor coming from Monsanto into the USDA and then over to the FDA under Barack Obama as a policymaker. Whose interests do you think he serves? Stop the rotating door of Judy Gerbling running the CDC at the same time that William Thompson said that she knew that there was malfeasance on the 2004 autism spectrum disorder study with the MMR vaccine showing a 324% increase in autism in African-American children 36 months and younger. Don't allow that anymore. If you come from a special interest group, stay there. Don't come to government and act like you're doing us all a favor when you're really there just to gut any regulations we have. Also, repeal the Patriot Act, repeal the National Defense Authorization Act, repeal and stop all asset forfeitures. Yeah. How about mandating that everyone in jail for possession of a drug is let out of jail and their record expunged? Close down all private prisons. Cap all interest rates for major credit cards at 3%. Why 3? Because they're getting their money for zero, that's 300%, more than enough. Close down all payday loans in their usurious 500 to 1,000% interest. So you see, and cap the military-industrial budget at 10%, because that's all we need. We don't need 56% of every dollar going to a group of the most criminally insane people on the earth. Stop all regime change. Have a truth and reconciliation. People have an opportunity, like in South Africa, to come forward and tell the truth about dirty operations from the CIA and the National Security Agency. Fire every employee of every governmental agency that knowingly was a part of any corruption. Bring every single former person in office that participated in any crime against humanity and bring them up on charges of crimes against humanity. It's never been done. That should be done. So until such time that I see someone who has a brain do something that shows their courage, everything else just pure theater and politics. So take the 5G article and send it over to Tucker Carlson. My hope is that he reads it and in the future doesn't call one of these doctors to come in and parrot the pro-industry position. Now, if he needs information on Monsanto, we've written articles. On Wikipedia that he's on in a negative profile, we've written articles showing the corruption of Wikipedia. You name the topic. If it's a serious public health issue We have definitive articles. How many? Over 800. And every one is written with scholarship and accuracy. Oh, and by the way, to the person who sent me an email, you're wrong about Japan. Japan allows you to have vaccines under the age of 2. My suggestion is that you go back and read what we wrote. First off, Japan does not have mandatory vaccines. In fact, Japan's vaccine schedule is recommended. None are mandatory. What is our source? Cambridge University's Quarterly for Health Ethics by Professor Peter Doshi, D-O-S-H-I, at Johns Hopkins. And the article was entitled Japanese Childhood Vaccine Policy. And we printed the extract. And that's why. And this was also printed in the Lancet Infectious Diseases, where the editors-in-chiefs on the editorial board of the Lancet stated that they were against mandatory vaccines. Now, wouldn't you think if one of the most prestigious, 5 most prestigious medical journals in the world said that they were opposed to mandatory vaccines, that somehow the mainstream media would cover that and ask why? They would, unless the mainstream media is part of the problem, which it is. And in fact, in that light, I have something I was reading this morning from Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone, out today. Quote, the liberal embrace of war. American interventionists learned a lesson from Iraq. Preempt the debate. Now everyone is for regime change. Quote, the United States has just suspended flights to Venezuela. Per the New York Times, Caracas, the United States banned all air transport with Venezuela on Wednesday over security concerns, further isolating the troubled South American nation. A disinterested historian would see this as just the latest volley in a siege tale. America has been trying for ages to topple the regime of President Nicolas Maduro, after trying for many years to do the same to his predecessor, Hugo Chavez. The new play in the Trump era involves recognizing Juan Guaido as president and starving and sanctioning the country. Maduro, encircled, has been resisting. Here's what's important. Listen carefully. The American commercial news landscape in schism on domestic issues is in lockstep here. Every article is seen from one angle. Venezuelans under the heel of a dictator who caused the crisis with the only hope, a humanitarian intervention by the United States. There is no other perspective. Media watchdog FAIR just released results of a study of 3 months of American opinion pieces. Out of 76 editorials in the New York Times, Washington Post, the big three Sunday morning talk shows, or PBS's NewsHour, wow, how did they reach the 6 people that actually watched that? 0 came out against the removal of Maduro. They wrote, quote, corporate news coverage of Venezuela can only be described as a full-scale marketing campaign for regime change. Allowable opinion on Venezuela ranges from support for military invasion to the extreme pacifist end, an urgent call for compromise with Venezuela. And then it gets down to this little nitty-gritty about Rachel Maddow and how she supports it, actually praising a person that there is nothing in the world to praise this man about, John Bolton. And, quote, regardless, this is Rachel Maddow, quote, regardless what you thought about John Bolton before this, his career, his track record, just think about John Bolton as a human being. Taibbi says the telecast was surreal. It was like watching Dick Cheney sing Please Give Peace a Chance. Bolton stood out as a bomb-humping nut, even among the Bush-era functionaries who pushed us into Iraq. He's the living embodiment of benevolent hegemony, an imperial plan first articulated in the 90s by neoconservatives Bill Kristol and Robert Kagan. It involves forcefully overturning any regime that resisted us to spread the wonders of American way to, as Norman Podhorst once put it, as many others as have the will and the ability to enjoy them. And then it goes on from there. So Matt Allison and marching orders with them. They're all on regime change. So that's the way it works. So why would anyone want to hear these people? So if Tucker needs some honest, objective, high-quality research, we'll send it to him. He can have one of his many staff go up, and they don't have to do anything. Just download it and look at our references. We hide nothing. I want to share something from Paul Craig Roberts. I haven't had Paul on the show for a long time. My goodness, probably 2 years. He's a person I have a lot of respect for. He's a tough journalist. He wrote an article published today. And it says the following. The Assange-Manning cases discredit humanity. Here's what he says. Everyone who is aware of the United States government's extraordinary criminal actions at home and abroad bears a heavy weight. The millions of people murdered, maimed, orphaned, widowed, and displaced by gratuitous American military aggression comprise a holocaust of deaths based entirely on lies and false accusations in order to advance secret American and Israeli agendas. I suspect that the heavy burden of responsibility for mass murder and destruction committed in our name is the reason most Americans prefer the fake news fed to them about how good and wonderful and exceptional we are and how hard our government works to protect us from the nasty folks elsewhere. This storyline converts the illegal, brutal war crimes of the U.S. government against women, children, defenseless citizens, schools, wedding parties, funerals, and farmers in their fields into glorious and brave defenses of our liberty and virtue. If you want the truth, watch the video leaked by Manning of U.S. troops enjoying themselves while from the air they machine gun reporters and innocent civilians walking along the street, and follow up by machine gunning a father and his two young children and babies who stop to help the wounded bleeding in the street. The leak of the video that showed the true picture of Washington's wars is the reason Manning was tortured in prison. It is the person who told the truth, not the criminals who committed the murders, who was punished. I agree that the fake story of America's moral worthiness is much easier to live with than is to bear the shame of the true story. But in the end, the fake story destroys our liberty even more completely than would conquest by a foreign opponent. People are more suspicious of an occupying power than they are of their own government and are less likely to believe foreign occupiers when they lie to them. In contrast, the people's own government can trap them in a false conscience and keep them there with fake news. Trump's crazed war criminal national security advisor John Bolton and the idiot Secretary of State Pompeo want to cause massive civilian deaths in Iran and Venezuela. Iran is to be overthrown by Israel and for Israel, and Venezuela for U.S. oil companies. The motives are blatant and obvious, but Bolton and Pompeo are not denounced and forced to resign for their shameful murderous intentions. Yet if they use the N-word or sexually harassed a woman, they would have to resign. This demonstrates the twisted and sick state of America's morality today. Bombing people is acceptable, but words might really hurt them. Washington's case against Joan Assad is so contrived and so weak that the corrupt U.S. attorney assigned to frame up Assange has resorted to prosecution of Manning in an effort to coerce false testimony against Assange from Manning. After being tortured for seven years in prison for revealing a U.S. war crime, as Manning was required to do under the U.S. military code, Manning was pardoned by President Obama. Now Manning is back in prison for a second time after being pardoned because Manning will not cooperate in the frame-up of Assange by giving false testimony to a grand jury. Without false testimony, the corrupt U.S. attorney hasn't a case that would get a conviction from even the typical American jury. Normally a collection of gullible people easily manipulated by the prosecutor. When Manning was in prison for 63 days for refusing to tell lies about Assange, Manning spent 28 of those in solitary confinement. Why? A week after Manning was released, the corrupt U.S. attorney called Manning again before the grand jury that the corrupt U.S. attorney is using a contrived case against Assange, again, Manning refused to cooperate in the frame-up and was again held in contempt and again remanded into federal prison. This time, a corrupt U.S. federal district judge added to Manning's jail time a day fine of $500 to $1,000. In other words, the corrupt judge is helping the corrupt U.S. attorney to coerce Manning into cooperating in a frame-up of Assange. Americans need to understand that their judges are not judges. They are operatives of the American police state. When I characterize the U.S. attorney and judge as corrupt, I don't mean that they are taking money, although I cannot rule that out. I mean that they are corrupt in the sense that they have abandoned the rule of law and do not see that their function is serving justice. The U.S. Constitution and its amendments establish law as a shield of the people against coercive and arbitrary actions of government. But the U.S. attorney and the judge are using law as a weapon against individuals against whom authorities want revenge. For years, we have been witnessing the rule of law being attacked from every level, from the president to the local police. No one has protested the open and highly visible effort to force Manning to commit perjury that can be used to build a case against Assange or otherwise be imprisoned for contempt and fined in penury. The despicable liberal progressive left whores that compromise the U.S. print and TV media and NPR will not protest the injustice. They hate Manning and Assange for having more integrity than all of them together. The conservative talk show hosts won't protest the attempt to coerce Manning because they love Trump. Washington's wars and hate anti-Americans, which is everyone who dares tell the truth about the U.S. On conservative talk show, I heard one popular host say, "I'm happy Manning is in prison." How wrong that is. No U.S. senators or representatives, and neither the Senate nor House Judiciary Committee sees anything untoward in forcing an American citizen to produce the needed lies for framing up the world's best journalist. Law schools and bar associations are not demanding the corrupt U.S. attorney to be disbarred for violating every precept laid down by the U.S. Attorney General, Supreme Court, and the Nuremberg prosecutor Robert Jackson. Nor are they demanding the impeachments of the corrupt federal district judge who perhaps has his eye on appointment to the appeals court for his cooperation in finishing off the First Amendment. The American people are too insolent and brainwashed to know what is happening. Regardless, they are powerless as third world peasants who have a dictator boot on their necks. And it goes on from there. Good for you, Paul Craig Roberts. Well, just remember, we keep hearing the word progressive, and we are the only progressive radio network, and we do stand up for Manning, and we do stand up for Assange. And unfortunately, using the progressive label and moniker, an awful lot of corporate liberals or corporate Democrats have positioned themselves to seem like they're moderate when they're not. They're more fascistic. So keep that in mind. But I appreciate your comments, and we have to know these things. Now we're going to go to a clip. I really appreciated what the educator, Joshua Katz, was saying. But he had about 7 minutes to go, and I think you would benefit from hearing his last 7 minutes of his talk.
Abstract classes in order to be college ready. And we throw around buzzwords like rigor and STEM, and the public loves it. We eat it up. We think it's fantastic, but we're missing the point that rigor has replaced the word relevant. I met with our district and I pitched the idea to bring back home economics, but this time as a math credit. First words in the response, that's not rigorous. So forget teaching students about measurement, taxes, discounts, loans, credit, debt, retirement planning, because it's not as rigorous as factoring trinomials and graphing logarithmic functions, so it can't fit. There's no room for that in this toxic culture of education. There's also no room for the arts and for imagination, which are being systematically removed from our public schools, because I don't think anyone profits from those things. Now, we have already felt the impact of our education policies. There are thousands of highly skilled jobs available right now. There is opportunity for small business development and innovation like never before, yet where are the majority of our students and graduates? There is an enormous opportunity in this economy for our students, but we just don't enable it in the schools because we're so focused on accountability and standardized testing and rigor and college ready. If we focus our attention on getting students what they need to find their place in this economy, all students, especially those students, would value education more highly, use their time more wisely, and make better decisions outside of school. Now, we got to keep the college-bound students going to college. We got to continue that path. However, we need to be more successful and more innovative. But what about the Natalies? I've got students that want to be tattoo artists, mechanics, barbers. They want work. Some want to open their own businesses, but they are those students. They constantly fail their classes. They're always in trouble in school. They may not even graduate. So I say, let's scrap algebra for them. Let's teach those students some tangible work skills that can help them in the future, the same way we used to do in the system before it was labeled as a failure. Why not get students out there making a living for themselves, rather than us spending another $10,000 in taxpayer money for another year of school for them to learn how to factor trinomials? Why not get them into the economy? How do we deal with all of these issues on a grand scale? I believe in Horace Mann's 1850s vision of an education system that can improve mankind. In public education, we've got an amazing opportunity to mold a better tomorrow. Yet what we are currently doing is so incredibly toxic. I have two solutions that would be better. The first idea I am not a big fan of, and in fact, I don't like it. We could completely defund public education, give back the $750 billion into our pockets. No more taxpayer money going to private companies and nonprofit organizations in the name of public education and on the heads of our public school children. Because let me tell you, that money's not getting to them or to the classrooms, and it's certainly not going to teachers. My second idea, which I am in favor of, is to double down on public education. We've got to eliminate these toxic policies, eliminate this focus on high-stakes testing, eliminate the corruption in the cash flow. Get the resources more directly to the students. Focus on them, on their abilities, on their non-cognitive factors. Train and allow the teachers to develop relationships with their students and assess them on what they truly need to know: thinking, reasoning, and learning. I believe in the potential greatness of a public education system done right, and so do my colleagues. But speaking of my colleagues, the public narrative on teachers, thanks to education reformers like Michelle Rhee and Bill Gates, is that our public schools are teeming with horrible teachers. The reality is that most teachers are accomplishing amazing feats of human achievement and motivation with their students every day, and what they're able to accomplish is being done to spite a professional environment of questioning, belittling, and self-doubt due to accountability measures and evaluation systems we had no stake in even creating. And teaching used to be called the noble profession. So why not make teaching a profession once again? Why not train and allow the teachers to develop their own assessment systems that can better fit their students' needs? Why not encourage teachers to collaborate with one another, or at least have a peer review system like in other professions? Why not involve teachers in the policy-making decisions at the school level, the district level, the state and national level? The truth of education policy is that it is written and enforced by people who have spent either little or no time in the classroom with the students these very policies are affecting. Take a look at the makeup of any boards of education, including local school boards and secretaries of education. Why not involve the individuals in direct contact with the students to help mold and shape the environment of the students? Education is the only industry, and it's a $750 billion industry, that is developing a product without any valid market research from its end users. Students aren't asked what they want or need. The teachers in the schools aren't asked what would work for their students. The public narrative has to be shifted. The schools and the teachers are not the enemy. It is the private corporations like Pearson that pay the lobbying groups like ALEC to write these policies and laws that get passed over steak dinners and campaign contributions because of words like rigor and accountability to perpetuate a bottom line on the heads of our public school children. Simply follow the money. of all the public tax dollars going to public education, how much of that money is going to private companies and nonprofit organizations for materials, training, resources, vouchers, accountability systems, and the education bureaucracy, because the policies support that simply follow the money. So we have to fight this toxic culture of education. We have to change the public narrative away from the curriculum, away from the schools, even away from the teachers. And we have to focus on our students. We have to teach them how to think and how to learn and how to innovate, not how to take tests. These are human beings. Why not stop judging the fish on how they climb trees?
Interesting, right? Now, I hope you had a chance to listen to part one. Now we're going to give you just part one. We only have 5 minutes of the Terminator, Skynet, and Alexa, the present future of artificial intelligence. We'll give you the first part today and the next part tomorrow.
Buddy, how many of you feel like you interact with artificial intelligence every single day? All right, about five. How many of you feel like you are pumping information into the cloud every day that could be used to manipulate your life in some way? Oh, fascinating, interesting. Okay, so there's a combination there. So two things I want to talk about, or actually kick this off. The fourth industrial revolution. So this is a quote from the current Google CEO, Sundar Pichai, that we are in an AI-first world. The fourth industrial revolution, I kind of see it as the sneaky breakthrough moment. It's happening. It has happened. All the interactions, as you'll see, are actually heavily influenced by artificial intelligence. So let's take a look. First, this is an old phrase we used to use about having myriad data and a dearth of information. Like, I just have a whole bunch of data, but I don't really know what it means. But let's take a deeper look. Data is the fuel of machine learning. How computers learn about what they're doing, what they need to do next, how they should act, how they can win games. Let's take a deeper look. First off, make a separation between data, information, and knowledge. So there could be an abundance of data, but you really don't have any information. If I was to say the stock price of IBM today is whatever, 100, could you act on it? You would say, well, I don't have enough information. I just have data points. So data over time is going to give you information on what you should do. But then knowledge is gained from information over an abundance of time in certain situations. Now you're actually thinking about other possibilities outside of just the stock market. Think about the data we actually produce. So there's two different things to think about. One is the data of things. Weather, data all the time, temperatures, humidity. This will all make sense later. Sensors, there are sensors on everything. Anybody here have a Fitbit? Okay. Has anybody heard the news recently of Fitbits being used to report on army locations and movements around the world? Okay. Sensors like Fitbit, they're everywhere. We are sensorizing everything. Smart readers, smart meters, the Internet of Things are all reporting data about our lives. Smart fridges, smart appliances, smart utilities. All of these devices, even engines on machines, our cars, they have system logs, they can all produce data. Have you ever been shopping on something on Amazon, and then you went to your Gmail, and there's an ad for it, right? We're not quite creeped out about it anymore, right? If this was 15 years ago, I'd be like, what? How do you know what I'm shopping for? Now I'm like, oh yeah, I meant to buy that. But all of these things are talking in the background. But let's talk about you, too. So, you know your age, figure out your gender, might know your weight, your relationship status, you give that up freely, your income you give to the federal government. I know by the census data, people know and can find out, and just so you know, the federal government gives up income tax data, but anonymously, to data engines to figure out what zip code, what marital status, how much money you make. So guess what? People can target market you. And we'll keep going. Every time you like something, every picture you take and share, every time you click through something, every movie you watch or pause or rewind, everything you purchase, which credit card you use or if you use PayPal, is being recorded and tracked so people can figure out what to market to you, what to sell to you, to make other influential decisions. And we willingly give all this information up. What's really important is this aggregation over time. When you put it in context, you have results. Did I win? Did I lose? This is a fascinating fact. Did you know that when there's a higher amount of smog, the stock market goes down? It's true. It's been proven. Small correlations in how much fine particulates are in the air around Wall Street affects behavior. And so on those days, stock traders aren't as risk-taking. So the stock market declines a little bit. Just a little bit, but it is noticeable. And there is a correlation. So this creates information. Information that is actually extremely useful. I have to make this comment because our cybernetic overlords are coming, and they might already be controlling us. But we'll get into that. But there's massive acceleration in not just the computing power, but the ability for the computing power we have to discern through all of these piles of information we've been producing in order to make meaningful decisions for us. Big data. If you haven't heard of this term,
right there. That's just the opening, and it gets a lot more interesting because he takes us on this whole journey. Just a quick update. If you go to our Gary Knowles YouTube channel, there are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of videos there. But we found last night that the pro-vaccine people were taking my videos like Silent Epidemic and putting a pro-vaccine video in embedding it. Now, they're not very smart because our IT people were able to uncover their identities in about 10 minutes. I brought in some of the smartest people around the world because they've been doing all they can. And we have, people going up and posting things that when I catch them, I look at it every day, I delete them, but they're putting stuff up on my website. So these people didn't get away with it. So if you go up there and find that it looks like a Gary Knoll video, but then you start watching it, it's not, at least this time we caught them, and they have been duly reported, and whatever the YouTube does with them, that's up to them. But this is how desperate they are. And they obviously saw our statistics with me having over 100 million downloads. That's 100 million. So they're not going to influence this audience. Maybe they'll influence other people to keep away from this information. That's also what they do. Destroy the messenger so nobody will be interested in their message. But that's not working for them either. And as of next week, we begin our lawsuits. I'll be reporting on a lawsuit later this week. This would have been staying up overnight, getting a lot of stuff accomplished. And last night it was going over with our lawyers, the final corrections. And we're posting our lawsuit. It's a big one, the biggest in that company's history. It's one of those like the tobacco industry lawsuits. It's a game changer if we succeed in keeping it from being dismissed, and we believe we have. So you all have a nice day. I look forward to sharing more with you tomorrow.